Welcome to the Wrestling Brethren Podcast. This is episode 418. Tonight's episode, we will discuss WWE Backlash in Lyon, France. With me tonight are Seth Zillman and Jarrett Aubrey. And fellas, sacre le bleu, this show was amazing. Or at least it sounded amazing. How the hell are ya?
Deja vu. Yeah, sacre bleu. Ho ho ho.
Yeah, great show, top to bottom. Like we talked about on our preview show, even the shows that don't look that great on paper, everybody brings their working boots. That's exactly what happened. I wouldn't be surprised if the main event is on the People's Match of the Year candidate list. And like we talked about also, I don't think anybody truly felt like AJ was going to win. They probably knew he was going to lose, but he was able to make it forget for a split second at a time. So yeah, looking forward to talking about this show.
Oh boy, I think we're going to have some differing opinions this show, boys. Could be interesting.
Well, we didn't have differing opinions on predictions. I can tell you that. I mean, we all knew that coming out of the last episode. But just to get it out of the way, we all went 5-0. We all got 19 points. And I'll hit the scoreboard at the end. But to get things started off, we had a tag team match that quickly turned into a street fight. And interestingly enough, they didn't come up with some stupid name of like the Champs-Élysées Street Fight or something like that. But we had RKO, Randy Orton and Kevin Owens, taking on the bloodline of Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga with Paul Heyman. And this quickly got out of hand before the bell even rung. And so SmackDown GM Nick Aldis came down and said, "All right, you guys want to just do whatever you want? Then do whatever you want. This is a street fight."
What a leader.
Yeah, right. I ain't got time for this. What, do you want me to settle this? Yeah, just do whatever.
Oh, it just that kind of on the spot thing, you know, change. I'm guessing, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing there's some people that might have compared it to something that might have happened on Raw. But I was cool with it because, you know, I was actually laughing at first when the security comes out, when everybody's basically brawling around the ring. The conventional logic would think, well, as soon as they start brawling, then just ring the bell and start the match. I mean, that's happened thousands of times before. But I think they just wanted to have that visual of the brawl and the security to show how intense it is. And then they go to the street fight. So it's an example of, if it's entertaining enough, you can kind of throw logic away to an extent. That's kind of how I felt. It was like, well, it was stupid to not ring the bell, but hey, it led to this cool brawl through the crowd match.
I'm trying to remember, did they all get in the ring first? Or did that all happen outside?
I thought they were all, at least two of them were in the ring.
Yeah, I just couldn't remember. Because yeah. If they were outside the ring, then it's like, oh, match hasn't started yet. Can do whatever they want.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was waiting for Josh to give the whole description of this, but I mean, it was a nice brutal match. Well, it was brutal for WWE standards. People beat the crap out of each other. We got a surprise. I think we were expecting a surprise. We were expecting a new bloodline member, but we didn't get the one we expected, did we, fellas?
No, we didn't get the related one. We got the unrelated one. Or I should say another unrelated one. Yeah, so before we get to that, just real quickly, the MVP of this show was the crowd, for sure, because they popped huge for Kevin Owens, who was the first one out. And, you know, he's obviously French-Canadian, being from Montreal. And Randy Orton comes out and probably gets the best entrance he's ever had. The crowd sang the entire song of his entrance theme. Fuck, Americans don't even do that. So Randy was like taken aback. He took a moment to soak it all in and show the appreciation. I mean, I was dumbfounded that I was like, that is not a sing-songy song. I mean, it is kind of, but nobody's done it in years.
And they even speak a different language and they kept up with it.
Yeah, that was insane. So we didn't get Jacob Fatu, who we all thought was going to show up. We got Tonga Loa, who is the actual brother of Tama Tonga, and they were Gorillas of Destiny in New Japan. Nobody knew that his contract was up because nobody made an announcement or a big deal out of it like they did for Tama Tonga or Kazuchika Okada or anybody else. And it turns out he was signed the same time Tama was, and they just didn't say anything. So we've got another unrelated bloodline member, but he's bloodline because their father, Haku, was always referenced as Uncle Haku by the Anoa'i family. So family by happenstance, but these two are actual brothers. So count me in the camp of counting the days until we get the Gorillas of Destiny versus the Usos.
That is going to be so awesome. Yeah, they are a hell of a tag team. I will say this just for what it's worth. I'm not predicting it's going to happen, but it wouldn't surprise me too much. They do have a third brother. There is Hikaleo, who's like 6'7", I want to say, so he fits the size WWE wants. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get him down the road as well.
Well, funny you should mention that, Seth, because I was going to. Because I just watched one of our friends from What Culture, and I can never remember the guy. It's not Simon Miller, but the other bald guy that does the news with Adam Wilborn.
Andy Murray.
There we go.
Andy H. Murray. The H stands for he forgot my name.
Sorry, Andy. Deeply apologize. But he was talking about brother number three in a video earlier. I think he said he was 6'8". And his contract is over in June.
Yeah. Here's the thing I've been racking my brain about. So let's say Hikaleo comes over and he's on Solo Squad. Do we add Jacob to Solo Squad, or do we put Jacob on the babyface side with the Usos and Roman? Because they're going to get quickly outnumbered here. And Jacob's the actual relation. Yeah. So,
yeah, I was just going to say he's actually.
Would you put him with the baby faces? Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. So he'd go to Bloodline Wolfpack and not Bloodline Hollywood.
Yeah.
And don't forget, Lance is out there too, still, right?
Lance is out there. And I got to pull up that tree that Rock posted, but. We've got Solo's, isn't it Solo's cousin, Umaga's son? I forget his name now. But he would seem to be on Solo's team, I would guess. I don't know. It's getting out of control before we can even get to that point. But anywho, that could almost be reminiscent of the episode we did on the Firefly Funhouse. We could do a whole episode on Bloodline members.
Yep.
Yeah. But one last thing about Tonga Loa here is this is actually returned to WWE form. He was back several years back. I forget the tag team name, but he wasn't pushed as being Tongan. They called him Camacho.
Yeah, and, he was Hispanic.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think he was with the Mexicools or something. But
yeah, he was with Unico, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Something like, but. Yeah. Yeah, he's probably going to have to change the name of his finisher. I mean, his finisher in New Japan was the over-the-shoulder pile driver like Bam Bam Bigelow would do. But, and I have to say the name because I can't not say the name and bleep it. But is that his finishing move they called in New Japan, Ape Shit. So they're probably not going to be able to get away with that on American television. Although it would be awesome if they could.
Hey, I mean, Michael Cole is spouting off members of Bullet Club on Saturday, mm-hmm. so who knows what we can do.
What was so, it?
But yeah, you would literally see him hit that move when you hear the announcer go, "Hey, shit."
I mean, Big E and CM Punk both mentioned New Japan by name. So mm-hmm. either they're getting fined or no one cares anymore.
Well, I just think it's Vince isn't there. Vince is probably the one who didn't want to mention any other companies.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. that's all I think it is.
Triple H is a historian, and we're gonna make the. I don't want to say cross the streams, but we're gonna make points of history connect instead of saying, oh, the only thing they won't do is mention AEW or TNA. Really, I mean, they're sort of softening on TNA, but you know, AJ, worldwide wrestler before WWE, they were all global.
He won 10 titles all over the world.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but where? All over the world. All over. He was an ocean champion.
Yeah, but now they're in the WWE universe, and the universe is bigger than the world, so.
All right, well, let's get on back on track with Backlash. And we had the women's title triple threat match featuring Bayley, Tiffany Stratton, and Naomi. And I will say that when I was watching this back last night, Nicole was in the room with me, and when the crowd was doing the "Hey Bayley, ooh ah, I wanna know if you'll be my girl," Nicole goes, "That's still a thing?" And I said, "Well, it only started 9 years ago in NXT UK," and I said, and she goes, "Yeah, but this is France." And I said, "Well, apparently anywhere in Europe it works." So I will say this: Tiffany Stratton is a fucking star. Yep. She is just some experience under her belt away from being a dominant world champion. She's just the it factor thing. Just everything. It's amazing at how young she is and how much star ability she has already. It's insane. But anyway, in this match, Bayley retained after the most devastating move in sports entertainment, the surprise roll up.
Yeah, I think you could say this was the weakest match on the card, but it was still very good. You know, everything made sense. I don't think they would turn Naomi so soon because they could do the thing of Bayley basically getting the pin on the other babyface, and then that causes her to turn. But it certainly looks, at least from the beginning, that Naomi was cool with it, that it was just competition. I mean, there was no cheating involved. So, we'll see.
Well, they were hugging after the match, though, weren't they? If I remember right, Naomi was in the ropes, and Bayley came and gave her a hug, and they were, and Naomi's like, "Oh, yeah, all good. You know, I don't suspect anything's coming out of that, at least not for a while." But yeah, Josh, you're right. Tiffany Stratton is a megastar. She's going to be a megastar. Although
not the megastar, but
yeah, not the
a megastar.
Yeah, a megastar. Even the wonderment that is Tiffy time couldn't keep me from keep my eyes glued on this match because not
of the other two,
how bright her star is. It could not outshine the double barrel of suck that is Bayley and Naomi. So I did not pay full attention to this match. I did watch when I heard things happening with Tiffany, but yeah.
I mean, it's Tiffany and two of your favorite people. At least there were no crappy Naomi kicks in this match.
Thankfully.
All right. Well, I will say this was not the worst match on the show. That is coming up in two matches from now. But then we had a backstage bit where Jey Uso was warming up for his match, which was coming up next. And into the screen walks Solo Sikoa. And he motions over his shoulder for people to join him. And of course, it's the Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa. And they walk past him. And then, in probably the best unspoken spoken word that I've seen in a long ass time, Paul Heyman trails behind and looks at Jay with such a facial reaction of, please get me the hell out of here. This is not my doing. And then walks past, but he didn't say a fucking word.
He is so good at the facial expressions. I remember a couple months back, I think it was when, I think it was what led to the Jay turn, when they were all sitting in like the Bloodline office and Heyman is just grinning like the bird that caught the cat at Jay. At least I think it was Jay. Oh boy, he is so awesome.
He needs to be put in the Hall of Fame. Oh.
Yeah.
Paul Heyman has been nothing but completely uncomfortable ever since Roman lost. And it's amazing. He's so good at it.
And they did a reveal on SmackDown that we didn't even cover because I had originally said nothing newsworthy happened. But yeah. Then when I saw some other highlights, they did a backstage bit with Nick Aldis and Paul Heyman where Paul Heyman says, I have not spoken to Roman Reigns since WrestleMania. And the whole crowd picks up on it. They're like, oh. And Nick's like, what did you just say? You haven't spoken to Roman since WrestleMania? And then it turns out that it wasn't Roman that withdrew himself from the draft. It was Paul Heyman that withdrew Roman from the draft because he did not want to expose him to the chaos that Solo Sikoa is creating. So more things to look forward to. And it's probably the only thing that does not make sense in this Bloodline story is if somebody was infiltrating your territory, would you be gone for 8 to 12 more weeks?
And not watch the show?
Right? So the timing thing is the only thing that doesn't make sense at this point, but yeah. We'll let that slide.
Yes. Yeah. Again, it's entertaining, so we're able to forgive dips in logic.
Yeah.
Fellas, seed planting.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but I mean, if somebody was performing a hostile takeover on your quote unquote company, wouldn't you jump back into the mainline mainstream and do something about it? Nah, I'm gonna just let it happen. And, 3 months from now, I'll work it all out at SummerSlam.
Well, yeah, because Roman's got to leave his house, get into the private limo, get into the private yacht, and go and take the private jet back to the mainland so he can do something about it.
Well, you know, he's stuck on the island of relevancy. There might be the moat might have moved and he stuck.
The moat.
But anyway, his
boat doesn't work.
Yeah, right.
He used the same boat as Veer Mahan from years back.
Yikes.
All right, so then that did get us to the WWE World Heavyweight title match between Damian Priest and Jey Uso, and this was another unbelievable entrance for Jey Uso with the whole yeeting thing and the cell phone camera, yeah. I mean, not camera, the flashlights and the bouncing up and down and the camera was shaking. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, never saw anything like that before. We'll see if it carries over to the American side. I would imagine it will.
The flashlight part?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
Yeah, or and even the bouncing part. But yeah, it was a nice visual. And I think the match went the way most of us were expecting, that people were going to interfere anyway for Damian Priest, and he'd get upset about it.
Yeah. He even tried to do a heel version of the yeet, and that didn't generate any heat at all.
No heat for his yeet.
Yeah. So in this match, it was a good back and forth until JD McDonagh reared his big ass head into the match. And rightfully so, Damien says, "What the hell are you doing here?" He goes, "What do you mean, what am I doing here?" And he goes, "I'm here to help. I told you I didn't want any help." So then more back and forth, and Finn Balor comes out and he tries interfering. And then it looks like Jay has the match won after a spear and a Uso splash, but JD pulls Damian's foot on the rope at the last minute for a great near fall and a false finish. And thanks to the distractions continuously happening, Damian is able to execute a avalanche south of heaven for the win and to retain the title. Post-match, Judgment Day looks like they're going to beat down Jay, but Damian pulls him off and say, "No, no, no, we're done here. You stand here, you stand here. We raise our arms and that's it." So, as we've been predicting and pontificating about, incoming face turn for Damian Priest.
Imagine this, fellas, that I don't know what it was. It kind of the when we were all complaining about the low point of WWE before Triple H took over things, and we were sitting here going, imagine if they could only give us little tidbits of information every week or make something happen that would make us want to tune in the week afterwards. Right? So Friday we get the Paul Heyman thing at Backlash, we get this with the Judgment Day, right? It's like, you know, I don't want any help, but they come out anyway and they sow further seeds of malcontent, right? It's, oh, well, what's going to happen tomorrow night? It's like, this is getting great. Just the sheer, you know, something happens, a little drop of something happens every show now. And it's like, well, I need to watch next time. And I haven't felt that way about WWE in a long time.
It's the Batman theory. Will Judgment Day stay together? Will Rhea Ripley return to television? Tune in. Same bat time. Same bat channel.
You're not wrong.
All right. Then we had what I will deem as the worst match of the show. And even still, it wasn't that bad. I think something happened to Jade in the middle of the match that knocked her loopy for a bit. And it seemed like the Kabuki Warriors had to work around that until she was able to get her bearings again. But in the women's tag title match, Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill did defeat the Kabuki Warriors and became the new champs. And I must say, the end segment prior to the KOD, which I think was on the wrong, was not on the legal person, but I guess they're just going to gloss over that fact. But be that as it may, Jade's spot where she catches Kyrie coming off the top rope, hoists her onto her shoulders, spins her around in a 180, drops her, and mid-drop catches her, hooks her arms, lifts her up, and slams her for Jaded was nothing short of outstanding. Apparently she did that in AEW with Sky Blue, who is also someone who's short, light, and easy to throw around, but holy hell, man, that was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it does require cooperation, but I mean, it's visually stunning.
Yeah, that was a sequence of the night for sure. Hands down. That was amazing. And I don't know if she was knocked loopy. I think she was about an inch and a half away from a wardrobe malfunction at one point.
That could be. Maybe she's more focused on that than what she was supposed to be selling, because I know they were hitting her with back fists and chops and things and the normal stiff offense that they have. And she wasn't really registering it as well as she should have been. And I was like, what the hell is going on? But anyway, new champs as we predicted, and may this be the beginning of the long and winding path that gets us to Bianca versus Jade at WrestleMania 41.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what we're getting to. Although it seems like a couple years down the road, Jade Tiffany Stratton feud would be cool too.
Yep, we will have to see. And in the main event for the undisputed WWE title, where Jessica Carr became the first woman to referee a WWE title match headlining a PLE, Cody Rhodes successfully defended against AJ Styles in yet another set of both entrances being very verbally received by the Lyon, France crowd. This was another point where the camera was shaking, but between the World Heavyweight title match, I don't know if they did it in the women's match, but I know they did it in the main event. I'm loving that 4K camera shot of the challenger and the champion where the background is all blurred and you're just focusing on the singular person. Great shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said at the top of the show, this is probably match of the year candidate. We all knew AJ wasn't winning, but he made us forget that a couple times. So yeah, I really didn't have any complaints about this match. And I'm pretty sure Jared does because he let that known in our kind of pre-show chat. So I guess I should step aside and let Jared have the floor.
It's not so much specifically about this match, but I actually have a real hard time putting this up there against the match of the year list when you have what's been going on over in AEW lately with Will Ospreay. But yeah, I've been watching Cody lots lately, and I just find myself going more down the boring hole with him. Like, it just seems, what am I trying to say? It's like he doesn't have like the match psychology down. It's like he doesn't work a body part. Like, there's no structure to what's going on. And then his promos are boring on top of it. And I'm like, I'm really not digging Cody right now. And really when you have a world championship match like this, or a championship level match like this, and the crowd help take me out of this, because they're not reacting to what's going on in the ring. They're just singing and yelling and screaming and having a grand old time. I mean, the noise was great and the atmosphere, it made a really great atmosphere, but it kind of took away from what was going on in the match. Now, the thing I have a real big problem with is, Jesus Christ, I forget how long into the match this was, 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. And both guys are kind of dead tired. They're beaten up. And AJ Styles hits Cody Rhodes with a gosh darn fucking burning hammer. And we haven't seen one of those in I don't know how long. And Cody kicks out. Okay, kicks out at one after everything I just talked about, after a grueling match, after getting beat up, after getting hit by a move that was used all of 7 times because it meant instant death, and he kicks out at one. What the? I can't even say it. What the fuck? It's so wrong to me. How this doesn't bother anybody else.
Well, like I said, it's not AJ's burning hammer.
Well, actually, it was AJ's burning hammer.
In this match it was, but not his finisher,
It wasn't done by Kenta Kobashi, therefore it wasn't as devastating as Kenta Kobashi's version.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
He didn't have the oomph.
It's like the DDT by Jake the Snake. It's different when everybody else does it. I kind of get it's still a goddamn burning hammer there, for the love of God.
Well, I thought at least the little details were cool, that AJ went back to the color scheme that he had on 20 years ago when he faced Dusty Rhodes for the defending the NWA title. He had purple and black on back then, so he wore purple and black again 20 years later facing his son for the WWE title, which is just mind-boggling when you think about it.
And I still also remember the reviews of that match, because they said, yep, you read that correctly. Even at his age, Dusty went 15 minutes.
And that's actually one of the other things that's starting to bother me. Everybody talks about Dusty when they face Cody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could throw that in.
That's got to be a little bit
creative.
Yeah, it's probably going to bug him a little bit, I would think.
Well, he stated as much, whether it's in mm-hmm. character or out of character. He's kind of tired of hearing about it. He'll be happy the day he faces somebody and goes, you know, I've never even heard of you, Dad. Thank God.
Yeah, just kind of reminds me, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but it kind of reminds me of somebody saying, I forget exactly who it was, but since saying something to Harrison Ford, and it was like, wait, you're in Star Wars? And then, you know, the joke is like, that became Harrison Ford's favorite person because he something like that.
Dude, how to be naive. Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, all right, coming off May the 4th. I'll shut up now.
So that was Backlash. As I said, we all went 5-0. We all got 19 points. And here's the big scoreboard breakdown post-Backlash. I still sit on top at 42-6, an 875 winning percentage, and 147 points. Jarrett in second at 40-8 with an 833 winning percentage and 134 points, trailing by just 13. Seth is 34-14 at a 708 winning percentage and 109.5 points. Now, what's interesting is the next predictions is going to be a dual predictions weekend that we love so much, because the next one is Memorial Day weekend, where we will have both WWE presenting King and Queen of the Ring in Saudi, and 24 hours later will be Double or Nothing for AEW. So that Friday, we will be making predictions for two companies' pay-per-views.
Jeez.
And I'm sure that's just chance. It's just a coincidence that WWE booked a pay-per-view the same weekend as an AEW. And of course, I'm being sarcastic when I say that.
The other thing to note is, so while we all went perfect at 5-0 and we all scored the same number of points, out of the three of us, there's only one of us here that has been perfect two shows in a row. Mm-hmm.
And three nights in a row, if you want to call it that.
There you go. Just had to get that in there.
Now, if you pull it off and do Double or Nothing undefeated again, there's going to be something amiss. I'll tell you that.
I told you I know Don Callis.
This is true.
Yeah, we're going to have to start playing Mr. Perfect's theme music when we introduce Jarrett.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm secretly a member of the Don Callis family. No one knows that.
All right. So any final thoughts as it pertains to Backlash or coming out of Backlash?
No, but good show, like I said. So on to the next.
Yep. Like I said earlier, it's probably one of the biggest compliments I can give at this point is I want to see what happens tomorrow.
Yep. And I can tell you part of what's happening tomorrow, because they did reveal some of the Raw brackets for the first round of what they're calling the King of the Ring tournament. So the first round, I guess, will air on free TV on, you know, regular television. And then the later rounds will be on the PLE. So I don't remember all the matchups off the top of my head, and I didn't even take note of it. But I know for sure that we're getting two very interesting matches on the men's side. And we're getting Sheamus and Gunther in round one. And we're getting Ricochet versus Ilya Dragunov tomorrow night in round one.
Yes and yes. Banger and after banger.
And on the women's side, all I can remember is it's Asuka versus Lyra Valkyria.
Jeez, I wonder who's winning that.
Well, you never know. All right. Well, next episode will be Tuesday, where we recap Raw and the first round matches that we see, plus NXT TV. So until then, once again, thank you for listening, downloading, and subscribing, and we will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. Visit the mothership, if you will, at twbpodcast.com, the online home of the Wrestling Brethren podcast. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments on Twitter /X at twbpshow, on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthesquaredcircle, and on Instagram at The Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter /X at The Bacon Rev. You can follow Seth at Lord Xandrax. And you can follow Josh at Southpaw Josh. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you soon with more from The Wrestling Brethren.